Okay, we're running ahead of schedule, so I think we'll keep going and move on to agenda paper 6, IFRS 1.
At the last meeting in September, the committee discussed feedback on the tentative agenda decision relating to the application of IFRS 1 when a subsidiary adopts IFRS standards for the first later than its parent. Following the discussion, the committee published an agenda decision explaining that the exemption in paragraph D16A of IFRS 1 does not apply to cumulative translation differences. This means that such a subsidiary recognizes cumulative translation differences at its date of transition to IFRS either at zero or on a retrospective basis. The committee also decided to research possible narrow scope standard setting in this respect. The purpose of today's discussion is therefore to discuss such possible narrow scope standard setting. First, we considered how a subsidiary could report the same carrying amounts of assets and liabilities as reported by its parent applying paragraph D16A of IFRS 1, how the subsidiary could achieve that outcome. This is discussed in paragraphs 14 to 18 of the paper. Our view is that the subsidiary could achieve that outcome because it could measure its assets and liabilities at its date of transition to IFRS as if it had accounted for them upon IFRS standards from the parent's date of transition to IFRS, taking into account the effects of any exceptions and exemptions that the parent had applied. Second, following this view, we consider the scope of possible narrow scope standard setting. Paragraphs 19 to 31 of the paper discuss this. Based on our analysis, we think there are no exceptions or exemptions in IFRS 1 that would create a question or concern similar to cumulative translation differences. Consequently, we think the scope of any possible narrow-scope standard setting project should be limited to cumulative translation differences. Paragraphs 32 to 35 of the paper then discuss potential benefits and costs of standard setting. Considering these benefits and costs, we think the potential benefits of undertaking a narrow scope standard setting project are likely to outweigh the potential costs. Consequently, on balance, we recommend that the board propose to amend IFRS 1 to allow a subsidiary that applies paragraph D16A of IFRS 1 to use the same amount of cumulative translation differences reported by the parent based on the parent's state of transition to IFRS. The question for the committee is on page 11 of the paper and asks whether you agree with the staff recommendation to propose to amend IFRS 1 with a targeted scope. Hand over the committee to discussion.
I agree with the staff recommendation to amend IFRS 1 and to limit it to the cumulative translation differences, but I do have a question of clarification on how it actually works, because in the question that you ask, you use the word allow. So the way I was envisioning this is if a subsidiary was to choose the election in D16A for all of its assets and liabilities, it must use the parent's amount for the cumulative translation difference. And if it did not use the in 16A for assets and liabilities, it must use then D13, which isn't allowed. That's a require. So yep. Does staff believe it's allow or require?
It's a package decision. You decide as a package.
Yes, yeah. That's what I meant.
So that option is available only when the subsidiary applies paragraph D16A. So if the subsidiary applies paragraph D16B, there's no option for a subsidiary to use the same amount of cumulative translation differences reported by its parent. But when the subsidiary applies the exemption in D16A, we did not think much about whether it would be an option or a must.
Suppose the way it's worded at the minute, it was an allow, not a must. I don't anticipate problems if we wanted to make it a must.
So you do everything one way or not?
Complete package.
So maybe that's something that should be clarified if we bring it back then.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bertrand, I think.
Sorry, could you just elaborate a bit more on that?
I think the staff were saying they hadn't.
So if the subsidiary applies paragraph D6 and A, whether it means the subsidiary must use the same amounts of cumulative translation differences reported by the parent, or whether the subsidiary could still choose to apply any other options in paragraph D13.
Mm-hmm. The staff, I think, were thinking it would still be a choice, but
yeah.
Bob's asking whether we should actually restrict that. But perhaps it should be discussed in more detail.
Maybe it just needs to be thought through.
Yeah.
So I appreciate the staff's proposal, and I agree with the staff's proposal. But unlike Bob, I would still think that if you're in D16A, you should allow effectively the three options that are open in D13. So maybe it's something we need to discuss a bit more. But I don't see why we shouldn't. We should oblige a consistency between the application of D16A and of one particular option in D13. Why? It's just because the purpose of it is just a practical issue. It is just a practical relief. So to impose a must for a practical relief is quite hard.
So it would be one argument. The other would be how many different variations, I guess, do we want happening, but maybe that could come back in the paper. But good to know what your logic was. Bob, did you have a different consideration?
Well, I wanted to say, I think the way you go, whether it's an option or requirement, really affects where you put it.
Yeah.
If you say it's an option, I'm not sure you can put it in D16A. You have to put it in D13.
Yeah, and I think that was our thought. So our thinking so far is it would be an option, because I think, I know we haven't spelled it out, but I think our thinking was we'd end up doing this via amending or proposing to amend D13, which, as you're right, would make it an option.
And I was thinking it would be a package deal, so, but...
Question. Okay.
Yes, I support the proposal from Stoff. I think it is very good and practical that we can come through in this issue and that we can do it as quickly as possible. And it should be very limited cost because it's just for new applicants. So, it's very good.
Thank you. John?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with the proceeding with the amendment. I do have a question or an issue with how the exemption in D18 for compound financial instruments is actually characterized, because it implies that if a subsidiary elected, there wouldn't be any difference in the use of that exemption between a parent and a subsidiary who had a later date of transition, because the subsidiary could elect to retrospectively apply IAS 32 accounting to the compound instrument. But of course, if the parent used D18, then retrospective application of IAS 32 to a compound instrument is going to capture instruments that expired before the parent's date of transition. So there is going to be a difference in equity between the parent and the sub in that situation. So I don't know if that changes the view about whether there should be relief provided for compound financial instruments accounting as well. But I do think, I don't agree with the conclusion here that you can apply IFRS 1 and get the same. If the compound financial instrument expires between the parent's date of transition and the sub's date of transition, then of course you can deal with those. But any compound financial instrument of the subsidiary that expires before the parent's date of transition will be captured if they don't use D18. Because D18, my reading of D18 is it's not an instrument by instrument choice. You have to apply it consistently to all compound financial instruments.
Honestly, I had a similar concern about one or two aspects of the logic for saying you'd always be able to get to the same answer in the other areas. But having said that, I still support going ahead with this. I think there's no particular cost to anybody and it's potentially helpful. So I support the staff's recommendation.
Okay.
had similar comments to John and Tony in terms of the IFRS 3, although I think if you push back IFRS 3 to the earliest date of the parent's transition, you probably would have had to have kept dual books anyway, so I think I got my head around that one. I also had a question on the compound financial instruments, but I agree with where the staff has got to on the cumulative translation differences, and I agree to carry on.
All right, so can we have a show of hands on whether the committee supports the staff's recommendation to amend IFRS 1 to allow CPDs?
Everyone?
Everybody? Yes. And I said allow there, but obviously we're going to bring that back as a question. Noting the good question. All right. Yes. Yeah. Oh, and I should say that this is Takashi's last meeting with the Interpretations Committee. I'm not sure we really should allow staff to leave as they recommend more work to be done. check the fine print, but I certainly have enjoyed working with Takashi, and let's take the opportunity to say thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.